find your forte.
Live your forte.
Welcome to another Finding Your Forte podcast. I've got a very special guest today known as Bola. You may know her as Refined Currency, but also as Bola Soul. She specializes in finance, women empowerment, but also lifestyle blogging as well. Really where I wanted her on was because I wanted to cover all those aspects. But I think with finance being a key thing among young people, it was always great for me to kind of get a guest who I can speak to in a bit more detail about finance in general. But I'll let me introduce the guest herself. Bola, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's good. How's your day been?
Oh, it's been good. I just did a power brunch and it wasn't subject to just women, but I had a feeling like there would be a particular type of audience.
Yeah.
But I was more than happy with that audience. It was 20 beautiful black women turned up and we spoke about our careers, the things we're doing. I spoke about ways you can make a bit more money.
Mm-hmm.
And just being confident in yourself. So, yeah, it's been a good day.
So was it something that you organised or was it something that someone else organised?
I organised it. Okay. And I find that a lot of people, like for me, Bola Soul and Refined Currency, they're two different brands. And, you know, Bola Soul, that's just me, that's my management. But Refined Currency, there are people who I don't particularly like to say work for me, but work with me. Mm. So there's like a managing director, there's a project manager,
mm-hmm.
there's things that we're trying to put in place. So that's more of a wider scale.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cool. So with the brunch itself, considering that's where you just come from, so
yeah.
What kind of things did you cover specifically that was interesting about it? Or what was the reaction from it?
Well, I've seen one or two tweets and I got some great feedback already. I spoke about how to get a mentor and the importance of actually letting the person who you hope to mentor you, let them know that, you know, you're special too, you're someone who's going to make a difference and that
mm.
they should feel happy to mm-hmm. have you as a mentee as well. So I spoke about that. I spoke about ways to make extra income and I won't delve into that now.
That's fine.
Yeah. And the third thing I spoke about was financial goal planning, getting your goals down, thinking what do you want to do and the importance of the fact that every month I say to myself, okay, I've gotten paid, but how is this going to make more money?
Mm.
How am I going to push to make more money? Because when you do that, you stop settling for your salary.
So, yeah. So it's in terms of making your money work for you rather than you working just for the money.
Correct. And the more you do that, the more you get your hustle on, the more ways are opened up to you, the universe opens up to you and makes you realise that, okay, I can make money here, I can make money there, and before you know it, you have enough money for a house. You flip one, then you flip the other, and it just, that's the way the world works.
It's once you take that first step, the second step becomes easier.
Absolutely.
So in terms of you and finance, is it something that you've always been interested in, or have you always been, has there been a time where you've been bad with money?
Oh, yeah, I still struggle.
Okay.
I still struggle, and I say that very openly. I've put it on my blog before and said, like, all that glitters is not gold. That was the name of the post. And it was to say, listen, I'm still out here sometimes in overdraft. Like, but the point is I'm getting better. I'm acknowledging certain things. I'm learning the importance of not only saving, but investing and just learning to take care of my finances. So definitely, I didn't start Refined Currency or talk about finance on my personal blog to be like, hi, I'm Bola and I've got like 15k in savings and I'm about to own a house. I'm here to be like, hi, I'm Bola and I don't have much savings, but I'm on my way up. Are you coming?
Mm-hmm.
So that's more the vibe.
So what was your motivation to start in Refined Currency then?
Yeah, when I studied maths and finance at uni, I'd go to networking events and there just weren't many women in the conversation. And then when I talk about how interesting bonds were and how your money can grow from there or different ways your money can grow from investments, and I sometimes talk to my friends, they just give me like this face, like they turn their head to the side and just be like, hmm. But what I started to read was, oh, they don't even understand what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And there just wasn't enough women in the conversation. And then, you know, you see some girls who are pretty and who love makeup and hey, nothing wrong with all of that. But sometimes when they are perceived to be as dumb as a stump,
yeah,
you hope they marry rich.
Yeah.
You don't hope that they're rich for themselves. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, that's bollocks. I was like, that's bollocks.
So it's quite a feminist kind of approach. Yeah.
I'm not afraid to say I'm a feminist. A lot
I don't
people,
think it's a bad word. I don't think it's an ugly word either. I mean, being a feminist.
People are afraid to say it these days. And I'm just like, look, you're either in or you're out.
I think with ideologies like feminism, communism, or whatever it is, I find it difficult when you define yourself by it, because sometimes you typecast and box yourself. But if that's how you want to refer yourself and that's your personal ideology, I don't think there's an issue with it, purely because that's what you gravitate towards.
Yeah, correct.
So it's not necessarily an ugly word. I just think that with all the commotion around it and all the distraction and noise around it, it can sometimes bastardize the word.
Absolutely. Yeah. I completely agree, but I just feel like, if you're going to say something, say it with your chest. Mm. Like, you know, I spoke to someone and I said, oh, are you a feminist? And she was just like, well, and she went round in circles. And I said, so you're a feminist?
Yeah.
And she said, yeah, it's just because of the word. And I was just like, the thing about now being a feminist, especially now the word has been, I wish I could say the word, now the word, there's something about the word, it has a certain stigma, almost a negative stigma now. In everything that you are, you have to own the good and the bad. You cannot be a feminist when it is a great time to be a feminist, because I am a black woman when it's a bad time to be a black woman.
Yeah.
Same way anyone who faces discrimination is a bad time to be a woman in general, or things like that. So the same way you carry the good and bad of that, you have to, you know, like I said, say with your chest, I'm a feminist. And fair, it's not a great time to be one, but I still am.
So drawing from that aspect, do you think women are better with finance or worse with finance in comparison to men, from your perspective and understanding?
I think they're better at, women are better at managing their money, but men are better at making risks, taking betting on themselves.
Okay, so.
So who has more money? I don't know.
It's not necessarily a question of more money, but in the sense of who manages their money better. So
I'd say women.
Women.
Yeah.
See, I'm kind of leaning on the fence on this one. I think women, in some respects, yes, but I feel like when it comes to indulgence and expenditures and outgoings, I feel like women have more than men.
Oh, yeah.
So I, which makes it, like, more difficult.
But that's more dependent on a woman and a preference.
Mm, true.
Same way it would depend if a guy likes nice cars and nice switches.
Fair. Mm, yeah, that's a fair way. I think, like, on a day-to-day example, rather than looking at the high-end stuff in terms of cars and etc. I mean, looking at day-to-day life compared to a woman, I'd like, when I look at the price of makeup sometimes, not saying all women wear makeup.
Yeah. No,
but,
I get
it. You know.
There's a lot more to us, like, for the package that is a woman. It's a lot more expensive, like hair products, things like that. I budget that stuff so much. I'm like, right, this is what you're going to do with your hair, you're going to condition it. When I buy, like, a new wig or whatever, I'm like, this is going to have to last me this long, because you're not spending any more money on hair.
Yeah.
So I try to make it balance out, as if to say it's, like, more of a normal expense as opposed to often. But I think it's dependent on a woman's upkeep. Mm-hmm. I'm more than comfortable with being like, okay, I'm going to have to keep wearing this tired-ass wig because I can't afford a new one right now.
Fair play.
So,
gotta do what you gotta do.
Yeah, but I think, you know, some people, they do struggle with upkeep and they struggle with saying to themselves, like, I'm not in the financial position to do this, so I'm not going to. Some people know they're not in the financial position to do something and they still do it.
Yeah. I think it's about making calculated risks sometimes.
Yes.
But touching back on the first thing you mentioned in regards to mentees going to networking events and etc., what kind of lessons have you learned being at those networking events, and how would you approach someone to be your mentor?
I don't approach them in the first instance to say, would you be my mentor? Because obviously what's happened is that person has given some form of great performance.
Mm.
So without being narcissistic, it's almost like, well, of course you're going to want me to be your mentor after I've just given a great performance.
Yeah.
You know, when you can't see me, do you still want me to be your mentor? Will you still be intrigued? So, like, when I do Snapchat talks and things like that, about getting a mentor, and young women come to me and be like, will you be my mentor? I'm like, no. Because I need to know that you still want me to be your mentor if I go quiet.
Mm.
You know, don't be addicted to the fact that I'm out here right now.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And in terms of networking, I have to pull myself away from wherever the food is. I stand there, it's my comfort zone. I can stand in the corner, I can smile.
Mm.
I can go back to the food, because, you know. But sometimes I just give myself pep talks in my head and I say, just go and talk to that person. And I pick people out. Something about them that interests me.
So do you always go for, not necessarily the loudest personality in the room, but the most influential personality in the room? Or how? What is your selection process then?
Yeah, sometimes it's like that. Sometimes I go to the quietest person in the room. Or sometimes it's very random. I'll speak to anyone and everyone, and they have about 2 minutes to impress me. Otherwise, I'm like, it was lovely to meet you.
Mm. Oh, in terms of you approaching someone senior or someone junior?
Both.
So they've got 2 minutes to impress you if they're senior as well?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, I'm much as an asset as you are. So fair. I think because we're young, we sell ourselves short so often.
I definitely agree with that.
And I'm just over it. Like, you don't want to talk to me because you think you're fancy and you're older and you know it, then God bless you, because yeah. I'm ready to move on to a person who sees the value in me.
I agree. It's interesting because, like, even at where I work at the moment, like, when I come across clients who like to flaunt their experience, I've got 20 years in the game, la 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 la, but yet here you are referring to me asking for help.
Yeah.
So why isn't your experience, you know, taking you there? Why are you coming to me for help?
Exactly.
Because you clearly see me as a beacon of information, so, you know, your experience should supersede that.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, now it's fair to say that a lot of times young people do act too humble when it comes to dealing with people that are senior, because they feel like, I think it's probably something where you must then respect your elders,
yeah.
But by doing so, you almost give them too much respect.
Yeah, and they like to, sometimes some of them like to brag on that a bit, like, yeah, I'm older, I've got this, I've got that. And I think some of them don't like that we're the new generation. We're the generation that created Facebook and Snapchat, and that people who did that were under 25 and they're billionaires.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that we now have that motivation, even, you know, Jamal Edwards, he's doing his thing. It's like, it's kind of, they look at us sometimes like, who are you to come in and make all these moves when we basically work 9 to 5.
Yeah.
But they forget we're coming from a different generation.
Mm-hmm.
Our parents came from their original countries and moved to the UK and built a life for themselves where them working a corporate job that we're working now would have been was a dream to them.
Mm-hmm.
And our eyes have been opened, and some of us have said, we want more.
Yeah.
If you don't want more, that's fine. If you love your job, that's fine. But for those who want more, we want more. And I think they look at you like, okay, some parents and older people in general look at you like, we didn't expect you to push this much or be this successful.
Mm-hmm.
Because then it almost tries to make it look as if to say their struggle wasn't
valid.
Yes, because we're doing more than what has been asked.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, your parents, sometimes they can set expectations of you. And when you're kind of like, no, I don't want to work this job because I want to be my own boss. It's like, no, I didn't suffer for that still.
That's fair. I think probably you could say it's like new money versus old money.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
So,
great way of putting it.
So when you're like in these rooms, because I understand you work in finance.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when you're moving within these meetings, these networking events, etc., do you find that there's certain behavioural traits that you've picked up on that you can kind of assess their usefulness to you? Like, do you sense a lot of ego within the room, or do you find that's a misconception about people who work within finance?
At networking, especially for the ones who are a bit older, a bit more experienced, maybe in their 30s plus, there's a sense of confidence. They want to be in the room and feel like they can give value. So sometimes it can come across as arrogance, but sometimes it's just confidence.
Mm.
And, yeah, literally that, but sometimes I just go up to them, I'll be like, I want to see how confident you really are.
Yeah.
Because then when I give them a question that they didn't expect, they're like, oh, what did you mean?
Yeah.
Because I remember one time, can't remember where I was, because I just go to so many random things in my life, but it was like 5 years ago, and it was a panel of women, and they spoke about their careers. And I was just like, what do you do on the side? Like, how do you make money on the side? And they were like, they don't. I was like, okay, thank you.
Mm.
And it just created an air of,
It kind of broke them in a way, you could say. Broke their perception.
It was just a bit like, are you your job?
Mm. Is anything wrong with that though, being your job?
No, I just don't trust in the business world enough
mm-hmm.
to make it my job. But then I work in finance, it can be very, very cutthroat.
Yeah.
That's why I don't believe it's like that in every industry.
Mm.
But I come from, I'm in a male-orientated business. So it's like, I just don't believe. I've heard stories, I've spoken to a lot of older people who have told me things. Something just as little as, okay, my dad worked at the post office for 40 years
yeah.
and he can't, even though his pension has come through, he can't afford to live on his own, so he has to live with us.
Yeah.
And he worked for them over 40 years, sacrificed so much time with his family, and this is all he has to show. And his pension is going to run out before he dies because the pension isn't...
The pension pot isn't that big.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I start to say, there's nothing wrong with loving your job, but find that extra hustle.
Yeah.
Find, and you don't want to learn that
mm-hmm.
15 years from now when you've got a kid tagging at your knee. You don't have time.
It's true.
So it's, if you can have hindsight before hindsight is necessary,
mm.
then you'll save yourself a lot of energy.
I agree. So in terms of like these secondary revenue streams that you refer to, what kind of things do you explore or would you recommend people, how they discover their own revenue stream?
Read into things and see what interests you. And also, don't be afraid to invest. Don't be afraid to put your money away. Don't be afraid to test risk a bit. Because with investing, there's always a bit of risk. Just, that's the way you're going to see your money grow. It's a bit like starting a business. Sometimes you have to test things, you have to run things and see how it is. Not everything is going to be so linear in life that you're going to know the outcome every single time.
Most definitely.
So just find something that you're cool with and put it forward. For example, I spoke to my friend about property. She said she's not interested in property. I said, that's fine. So what are you interested in? She said, I don't know. I said, find something you're interested in.
Yeah.
Like, don't let your money just sit at 1% to 3%.
Mm. Like, no, that's true. I think, but then at the same time, inversely, a lot of people feel like there's so much pressure as a young person these days to be a lot more financially astute. And I think where we come from, a generation where many of our parents were conservative with their finances, they followed the traditional model of get an education, get a job, work that job, and then your life will be okay where you'll be able to afford a house. And I think sometimes breaking that cycle is difficult for a lot of young people purely because of the way they've been raised, where they've been told such a narrative that the millennials now are so much, there's this fear within them to take risk.
Yes.
I think there's some aspects of young people who are so driven by risk and they're so happy to take risk. I know so many of my friends or colleagues and peers that I've met where they'll drop their job, go travelling for 6 months, come back and not care about having a job coming back and they'll just land on their feet.
Mm-hmm.
Or there's other people where they're like, no, I need this job because I need money in the most basic form. So in terms of risk, I think sometimes there needs to be an ideological shift sometimes from particularly like from my background, coming from an Asian background, risk isn't really promoted.
Yeah.
Which is ironic because I've got so many people within my family who do have businesses. But they won't necessarily push that narrative, be like, oh, become a lawyer, become a doctor, go down that lane because it's a nice, safe, secure route. But you're not really encouraged by risk. So what made you want to, what sparked that risk factor in you?
I've spoken to so many people who are older and I have seen them do so much for so little in return. Sometimes you think, oh, that's great, like, you could be a young person and be thinking, oh, yes, I'm straight out of uni and I'm starting on 25k and that sounds great. And then you move up and you move up and get a bit stagnant and then you're like, yes, I'm making this. But I've seen older people who have done that and I've seen them turn 55 and I've seen them get old in the workplace and they're still working, they're more tired, they have less time with their family. And then they're now in a place where they can't actually afford to retire.
Mm.
So they just keep going. I think that you burn out. I think, and I'm afraid to burn out. I'm afraid to be 60 years old and still working. Hell, I'm afraid to be 40 years old and still working voluntarily.
Mm.
And that's what moves me. I see people living their lives now. I'm trying to think. It's hard because I'd say, especially in the UK, you don't see it as much. But in the US, you see it more that people are becoming entrepreneurs and they're going on holiday.
Mm.
One guy I follow, Ty Lopez,
mm-hmm.
always taking people on holiday.
Yeah.
Always going away, always exploring things, always reading.
Mm.
I'm like, how amazing is that? That your business can run anywhere in the world and you can make people see the bigger picture.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think a lot of people just work in an office environment job, no matter what you do or what field you're in, because it's the only way we've been taught.
Mm-hmm.
But we're the new school.
This is true.
And you can still do what you love
mm-hmm.
via tech these days. So I think it's just about us opening up our eyes to say, you can still do what you love, just do it from a computer, on the beach, anywhere in the world. So, I mean, back to the point of what you said about risk, most of our parents are still working.
Yeah.
Like,
is that something that instilled a bit of fear in you, but is that kind of being what you don't want? So you kind of look at your parents, for example,
yeah.
not specifically, but
yeah.
in general.
Yeah, and I want to live my life. Like, I just want to live my life. For me, it's not even about money, it's freedom. It's actual freedom and it's choice. Because money doesn't always bring freedom. But it's having the choice. I don't want to say if I was a millionaire, but let's say that I now had the choice of, like, I've got 200k. It's not, I don't need to invest or anything. I have 200k. Me and my girls are going away and we're going to talk. We're going to look at how we can make moves in our career and things like that. And sometimes that's all you need, but you don't have time because you're always working.
Mm.
You're always going, you're always on the go. So I'm like, we just need time to figure things out. But
no, I agree. I think for me, like, it's interesting that you say money isn't freedom. But again, I think money gives you choice.
Yes.
And sometimes choice is essentially what freedom means.
Yeah.
If you have choice, you have freedom.
Yeah.
So if money can give you choice, then therefore you have freedom.
Correct.
So that's my way of thinking about how money correlates to freedom as such. But what would you say your biggest risk you've taken so far?
I don't feel like I've taken one.
Really?
Yeah.
So,
why not? I feel like I said that so quietly.
Yeah, why not?
It's all in the works. I just take calculated risks.
Okay. So you're planning to take a risk.
Oh, correct.
Yeah.
In the next year or two, the risks I'm about to take are going to be crazy, but
yeah.
I'm willing to do it. And yeah, but I'm very calculated in my risks.
Mm.
Anything I say I'm going to do, I've been planning it for at least 9 months.
Fair play. It's interesting that you look at it in that way. I think a lot of people think of risk as impulsive. They think of it as you must take a risk today.
Yeah.
Right now.
Yeah.
And that you cannot plan to take a risk.
Yeah.
A lot of people that I speak to that do take risks have maybe taken on an impulsive measure. But it's interesting that you say that you're calculating your risk 9 months in advance. So it's a planned risk.
Yeah.
And sometimes that can be almost a oxymoron in some ways.
Yeah. But I think it's for planned first time risk.
Mm.
Because let's say I want to invest in X next mm-hmm. year. And then I'm like, oh, I've waited this long to invest in it. And I'm like, wait, what? Is this all it's returning? Bang. Let's
yeah.
make the second one and
yeah.
the third one. So sometimes if I'm feeling like I'm not getting enough profit from that risk, drum up the second one, drum
yeah.
up the third one. That's when I start to go ham because I've had enough.
Yeah.
like, is this it?
Yeah.
So that's when I go ham. But when I'm new to it, I take my time.
Mm. So from working in finance and, you know, how long have you worked in finance, if you don't mind me asking?
2 years.
2 years. So from the time you've worked in finance, is there any sort of lessons you've learned which are not commonly shared within the mainstream thing? So, you know, obviously everyone says, yes, you should save, but is there anything that you picked up as a gem within working in finance that should be more explored that way, beyond having a secondary revenue stream, etc.?
Talk about your money situation a lot more with people you love.
Mm.
Or, you know, I wouldn't necessarily say a counsellor, because I actually spoke with a therapist. I had an interview with them on Refined Currency's website.
Mm-hmm.
And it's people only come to therapists once their money situation gets bad. But I think it's time people become accountable for their choices. Because one thing I've noticed from finance is that there's a lot of people, a lot of consumers,
mm-hmm.
whatever you want to call it, in a lot of debt.
Yep.
And this debt, and sometimes when I see the reasoning behind it, it's ridiculous. And because people don't like to talk about money, it then becomes this thing of secrecy.
Mm.
So you can do things like, for example, I could be like, yeah, I'm just feeling really tired. I get out a cheeky loan to go on holiday.
Yeah.
That's how it starts. Then you can't pay off that loan because you aren't really thinking.
Mm.
And then you have to get another loan to pay off another loan. And it just goes round in a vicious cycle unless you really halt yourself
mm-hmm.
and say that. But it's very hard for people to do that, which is why I want to start like a money mentoring or money counselling.
Okay. I think that would be quite good. I think with a lot of people, particularly myself, I've always kind of been quite financially astute. So for me, saving's been ingrained in me from my grandmother down.
Mm-hmm.
She's not necessarily the most educated, but those principles of saving are timeless.
Yeah.
She'll hide money around the house and she'll be like, make sure you put money everywhere.
Yeah.
It's the same thing, but just in a different context.
Yeah.
So those kind of lessons were always bestowed down to me.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that you say that you want to do something in money management, etc. And particularly regarding debt, because I feel like a lot of young people can't distinguish good debt from bad debt.
Oh, correct. So, like, yeah. If I talk about investing in properties, they're like, yeah, but doesn't that make you...
debt. Or they see it as a curse as such. They see every form of debt as bad. I think debt has become a dirty word.
Correct.
When in reality, debt correlates so well to credit.
Yes.
And if you've got no form of borrowing, i.e. debt, then therefore you're going to have no form of credit.
Yeah. Some of the best businesses in the world we know have been birthed out of debt,
mm-hmm.
and even businesses we've loved and bought from for over 10 years have still been in debt while we bought from them.
Yeah.
And they just managed to get out, and now they're starting to like live their lives in the plus.
It's true.
I read Richard Branson's book, Losing My Virginity, which was recommended by Cloud Williams. Just going to give him a quick shout out.
Claude Williams.
Sorry, I feel like I'm saying it wrong. Dream Nation. And yeah, basically Richard Branson just spoke about how much debt Virgin was in. That's what really pushed me to just be like, let me get in my business properly.
Because
mm-hmm. evidently nobody knows what they're doing.
Yeah.
I was just like, how are you in this much debt and you're still running things? And
mm-hmm.
But it's about taking risks and it's about believing in yourself enough to say, I can get out of that situation. So yeah, all debt is bad debt. But
yeah, I think with debt in a sense where like credit, for example, or credit cards, I remember there's a lot of this mentality, particularly young people from, you know, ethnic minority backgrounds, they see credit cards as a curse, maybe because of what they've grown up around and whatnot. And just the kind of, borrowing money that's not yours is a bad thing.
Correct.
But I think it's the way you manage that credit card is which works to your advantage.
And I think people need to know how to manage that, but how will they know that if they've never learned how to manage their money in general?
Mm, true, true.
So it can be very tough because until a year and a half ago, I never had any form of debt.
Mm.
And now I have some. But I'm a lot wiser because of it
mm-hmm.
to money, because I never knew people actually used their student overdraft. I never used mine.
Yeah, interestingly enough, the funny thing about... this is what my cousin said to me regarding student loan. He was like, it's going to be the cheapest loan you'll ever get in your life.
Yeah.
And he was like, when you're at uni, you're going to be time rich
yeah.
and student loan will give you the finances to, you know, to flip it. So ultimately what he was alluding to was saying, you're going to have more money than cents when you're at uni. So with that cheap loan that you've got, you're never going to get a bank to lend you money at 18 unless you've got, you know, a viable credit score, whatever may be the case. Take that student loan money, make sure you cover yourself in terms of accommodation, etc. But that surplus you have, play with it. And while you're at uni, while you're time rich, use it to your advantage.
Mm.
Buy things, flip it, buy things that you can sell in uni. And it was that kind of perspective. I was thinking, oh, wow, but this loan is for maintenance. This loan is for just for me to keep my day-to-day upkeeping. And then by being told that and by using my overdraft every now and again, I was able to take risk as such.
Yeah.
And, you know, use that to my advantage. And I think a lot of people, when they think of loan, again, it's a dirty word as well. So
it's not all the way bad.
Yeah, but then there's some people that just live in their overdraft. And I think that's a scary place to be in.
Yes, it is. There's so many things I want to do with like money mentoring.
Mm-hmm.
It's just very easy. You get in the red and then you get comfortable with the red, but you have to get uncomfortable and like, how am I going to get out? The thing is, sometimes with money and being in the minus or having debt, whatever you want to call it, it's a bit like trying to gasp for air when you are just on the brink of being at the top of the water.
Mm-hmm.
You are trying, but eventually you're either going to make it up
mm-hmm.
or you're just going to let yourself drown. And you have to push, but once again, if nobody sees you,
mm-hmm.
the option is completely up to you. But if someone sees you, you're more likely to survive.
I agree. So. I agree. So with your money mentoring thing, is it going to be women focused as well?
No, it's just going to be for everyone. And it's going to be one of those things where I see you and I see you once.
Okay.
So
why is
when
that?
I say once, as in there'll be like packages. Maybe I see you for a month, maybe I see you for 3 months.
Mm.
But when that time is up,
it's up to you.
We're not having this discussion again.
Yeah.
You have to decide and you have to make it click quickly because it's not even I don't have time. I'm not one of them drivers and chances that are trying to take your money and you're like, why aren't I passing?
Yeah.
You need to pass.
Mm-hmm.
And
so are you looking to turn it into a qualification as such?
Because I don't need a qualification for what I want to do.
No, so not necessarily for yourself, but in a sense of the scheme that you're looking to operate, is it a thing where people, you know how you say that driving instructor shouldn't pass, are you going to turn it into a qualification so
that people pass,
like a certificate as such?
That might be a good incentive. It's
yeah.
a good idea.
I think it'll be a
good incentive, especially for young people to just be like, yeah, like I got trained and now I'm
you're accredited
for you're ready, your money management. I want people to come back to me and be like, last year I saved 10k because I learned how to flip this,
mm-hmm.
this and this. And now I've put 30% in a bond for 3 years. I've done this. I've invested a bit in a property. I've joined forces with... And I just want to be like, yes, come on. Like.
So are you legacy driven then?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want something that will live past me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've always been very inspired by someone like Audrey Hepburn, who was... like a star icon, but also someone who I always remember her saying she has two hands. I think she said one was to help herself and one was to help the world. So I very much live by that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
I think for me, I've got a different philosophy. So mine is a good deed today is your reward for tomorrow.
Mm.
So for me, it's like I try to do good today and my reward is tomorrow. Mm. Not necessarily I'm going to get my reward tomorrow. So I see tomorrow as my reward.
Okay.
So that's my kind of flip of it. But yeah, no, it's interesting that you say that you're kind of legacy driven. I'm quite legacy driven in some ways. I think for me it's the same kind of theme of helping.
Yeah.
But in other respects it's having that ownership.
Yes.
I'm driven by ownership.
Yeah.
And I feel like tangible things live beyond you.
Yeah.
And I think your name can live beyond you. But say for example, let's take something as simple as a house or a business. I could die tomorrow, that house, that bricks, those walls, that roof is going to live beyond me. And if that's something I can pass down, that's what I look at. But also for me, I think for a lot of people coming from different backgrounds, say you've come from a very affluent background, you will have something passed down to you. I think those that don't come from an affluent background, I see them as the sacrifice generation. So our parents were the
sacrifice
generation.
Absolutely.
But there's some people, young people now, who are that sacrifice generation, because unfortunately their parents either didn't sacrifice or couldn't sacrifice.
Yeah.
They were just trying to live within their means as much just to kind of raise you, but they didn't necessarily set you up where you didn't have to sacrifice.
Yeah.
So I think sometimes with a lot of people, young people that I speak to that may come from a low income background, they may come from, you know, living in ends, they don't realise that they want to be selfish within themselves. But in order to set the next gen up, they're going to have to sacrifice.
Absolutely.
And that sacrifice culture isn't instilled with many of us. I became kind of aware of that. I was thinking, sometimes I get frustrated with myself.
Mm.
I'm thinking, my parents didn't necessarily set me up. So now I have to work twice as hard so that my children don't have to work twice as hard. But you get frustrated by it. But in the same respect, that's the reality of the situation. You know, if you want something to live beyond you, you have to sacrifice something for it.
Yeah. I'm very aware that there's probably a large percentage of the money and investments that have to come that I won't enjoy, I won't see as yeah. much, not necessarily enjoy.
Mm.
You know, one of my mentors, she's like, I want to live to enjoy my money. And I'm like, yeah. But when they did this, that thing on, I can't remember what channel it was on, maybe Channel 4 about, was it, were they all Nigerian or the Africans who, the millionaires?
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
One thing I noticed is all the people who were self-made were still working, and the people and the children who weren't were were doing entertainment things.
Yeah.
They were doing things they, should I say, that they would do when money is not an issue.
Mm.
So there's a very big difference. But for me, I think I'd enjoy the little things a bit more,
mm-hmm.
even if I couldn't enjoy my money as much as I want to. I just enjoy working from home. I'm such a home girl, so my pyjamas would just be the dream. Be like, and that's enough for me, you know. It's not about being out there and having the fanciest this or the fanciest that. It's literally, wow, it's good to be home. It's good to turn on heating when I walk
yeah.
into my house.
Yeah.
And I pay the bills and, yeah.
A sense of autonomy, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, I think it's the little things that when you're grateful for,
mm-hmm.
going on holiday, like I've never been on a full family holiday.
Is that something that you want to achieve?
Yeah, definitely. I know it's something I will do, but, you know, I won't have as many kids as my mother.
Fair enough.
So I think it'd be a bit easier, management, crowd control.
Is that something you're conscious of, then, as a woman, then? So how many kids you have, and in correlation to your finance? Because you know how there's this, particularly nowadays, a lot, you hear this opinion and you hear this rhetoric, have as many kids as you can afford. Why are you indulging in having kids that you can't afford? Is that something you're conscious of?
Yeah, but have as many kids as you can afford at every age, I would say minus two. I would be like minus two, minus four.
Yeah.
But there's no particular age. It's a bit like getting married. It's like it's an investment,
mm.
and there's some risk, but if you know the risk is worth it, you take it. So I am more conscious of having a certain number of kids because I question my emotional ability, and I know myself enough to know that if I have too many kids, I will feel drained,
mm-hmm.
I will be angrier.
So you're kind of thinking from a self-preservation point of view.
Yeah, yeah. That if I have two kids, I want to invest in
mm.
them. If I have three, I want to... If you're talking to me about five to me is a scary number.
Yeah.
Four is a semi-scary number. Just come round to three.
Yeah.
But two.
Two's the ideal.
Yeah, you can pour everything you know into them and
yeah.
just say, you know, you can do this. And when you've got five, you're like, pass me the baby's bib.
You call them by their number, like the oldest one, the youngest one, the middle
literally,
child.
Literally. I mean, and I don't even think that's about money.
Mm.
I want to be able to pour into each of my children, and I want to, you know, have time for them.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the more of them there is, then fair enough, they can learn from each other.
Mm.
But I want to be the one to instill it. So.
That's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair. Do you become very conscious about finance and relationships? Do you see any sort of correlation, or is there anything that, when you are in a relationship, is anything that you look at from a financial perspective? Because I feel like, particularly a lot of people, me working in finance before, sometimes you can assess a person based on their finance as well and see how it matches up to you.
Yeah, that sometimes I look at someone if I'm in a relationship and I'm like, oh, they're a bit frivolous,
mm-hmm.
but I'll try and rein that in,
mm-hmm.
be like, hey, sometimes you can stay at home, you know, just for the sake of them. Or I also like to see a man's motivation towards paying at times. I'm someone who's always just like ready to get my purse out.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, sometimes it's nice to see that sometimes he's like, I got this. I'm like, all right, you're not afraid to treat a girl. You're not afraid. And yeah.
It seems to be such a debate that comes up so often about who pays what, when, why.
Women need to stop living in a princess syndrome world.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Do you know what? I think sometimes men, when it comes to paying in that respect, they can be a bit too cynical.
Yes.
And they feel like, oh, why should I pay? Which is all fair and good. And I think the whole Dutch approach of going halves in some ways, it's like, I think the motivation by it shouldn't be the money itself. I think it should be about
the gesture.
The gesture.
Yeah.
Exactly. The gesture and the intention in some respects. So, personally speaking, I don't have no issue paying.
Yes.
You know, that's just me. You know, the way I've been raised, etc. If I pay, if I'm in your company and I can so happen to want to pay, I'll pay. The only thing for me is that this is my rule. I'll say I'll pay. I'll see if she says, no, I'll let me insist, right? And then, say for example, I'll say, are you sure? Once. I'll say, are you sure? Twice. If she insists after two times, then cool, we'll go halves.
Okay.
Right? But I'll always make sure that I take the initiative of paying.
Yeah.
But if she's adamant, I'm going to give her own sense of willingness to want to do so. I'm not going to take that away from her. So if she wants to pay, she wants to go halves, or she wants to pay, then cool, I'll allow her to. Because at the same time, I've been in relationships where I paid for everything. And not because I felt like that was my responsibility, or it just so happened to be the case. And like, funny enough, my partner at the time said to me, she's like, sometimes let me pay. Like, give me that feeling of paying and, you know, being responsible for this.
Because it can feel a bit like they're your parent.
Yeah. It's a transference of power sometimes as well. So sometimes if you've got a man paying for everything,
you're just going where they're going.
Yeah.
You're just like, oh, you're going to, where are you going? Here. Oh, yeah. It all becomes silently submissive at times.
That's true. That's true.
It can feel a bit like that.
Very submissive. I mean, I think it's something that you don't necessarily mention in your book, but, oh yeah, congratulations on your book.
Thank you.
It's a nice short read, you know, very poignant at times, but it's got some nice little gems in there. So, speaking about the book itself, what was your motivation behind writing the book?
I very much believe in, like, the universe and things that put out. My friend said to me on Facebook, she said, are you planning to write a book anytime soon?
Mm.
Yeah. Met with my friend the other day. Shout out to Aloni. Like,
she's doing bits.
Power she's pusher. Bits. Power bits. Pusher.
She may divide opinion, but she's doing bits.
Exactly. No matter what you think of her opinion, no matter what you think of how she runs things.
Yeah. I agree.
I give her that much credit, and you know, she is a go getter. I love that about her.
Mm-hmm.
I meet up with her every now and again, and she's someone I, you know, look to for just motivation at times. And she was like, you should write a book.
Mm.
And I was just like, yeah, you're now the second person that said that. And then within the next week and a half, I was going on holiday, and I was just like, I want this ebook out before I go on holiday.
Mm-hmm.
So wrote it in about 4 days and got it edited, had it transferred into like either PDF or iMobile format. There's mm-hmm. about three different formats. Made yep. a cover. I was like, yep, putting it out there. I just felt like I had so much to say, and so many people say to me, sometimes your blog posts aren't long enough.
Mm.
And people have already said to me, your ebook, when you're ready to write a full book, let me know. But sometimes I'm like, there's still so much I have to experience. Mm-hmm. And
you don't want to do something before your time.
Correct. And I still feel like, yeah, I'm just giving short snippets, because by the time I give a long snippet enough to either make a long book or a real book, I won't be on social media in the same format I mm-hmm. am now. So, so the motivation was just feeling like the universe was putting it out there for me to write an ebook, and that I was actually pushing numbers on my blog. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, numbers are out here. People I don't know are approaching me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember starting my job recently, and I was just washing my hands in the bathroom. I saw another young woman smiling, and she was like, I love your blog. I was like, no way.
Yeah.
I was like, no way I'm at work and you just said that. I was like, give me a hug. So it was so nice. And I was just like, yeah, young women need to know this, and they need to know that it's possible, it's out there, and they just need to have more confidence in themselves, because we as women, we second guess ourselves a lot mm-hmm. more. We give a lot more credit to other people before we give it to ourselves. A lot of people are like, oh, you're quite bold and unapologetic. And I'm like, yeah, I think we've kind of been apologising for too long as well. Yeah.
I think in general, like I always say, humble pie starts to stay stale after a while.
Yeah,
you know?
Drake has a similar...
Yeah,
Drake,
something. So I maybe got it from him.
Being humble don't work as hard as being on.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
But no, it's true. Like, funny enough for me, even with the podcast, people would approach me and saying, why don't you write? Why don't you do a blog? And I said, I'm lazy. And then I was like, actually, let me think of something, considering I'm getting these requests to do something. So I thought, all right, let me try the podcast where at least I can have a conversation, where most people tend to say to me to do something when they have a conversation with me.
Yeah.
And I think the moment where it was funny for me is I was on Tinder.
Yeah.
I matched with a girl and she was like, oh my God, your podcast is amazing.
No.
And I was like, this is crazy.
Oh my gosh.
This is crazy. And it kind of put things into perspective for me. It was like, you never know where your podcast can, where your, the thing you put out there, how far it can reach.
Yeah, the body of work that you do.
So, but it's good. In terms of the book itself, now, reading it, did you ever find it difficult to share certain things, or was there anything that you was kind of scared to share? Because in the first chapter itself, you know, you say, don't ask me about where I work. And you say, you know, I don't like to really talk about that aspect. So was there any other aspects you were quite restrictive on, or you were kind of conscious about not sharing?
I never share my relationship status.
Okay.
I want to be seen as a woman doing things. I don't want to be seen as
a girlfriend.
Yeah.
But then, why? What does a relationship do to a woman?
Okay. Who is it who was running? I can't remember names now. It's all gone out of my head. When they were running for prime minister, it was two women.
Mm-hmm.
One didn't want to have children. And then there was this whole thing of, you want to know, is she married? Is she this?
Mm-hmm.
And they associate it with stability.
Mm-hmm.
Not every woman wants that for herself.
Theresa May hasn't had kids, I see.
Yes, exactly. So it's Theresa May. And I remember one time going into my friend's office, speaking with so many people there, talking to so many people, and my friend goes, that's Dudu's girlfriend. I went, oh my gosh! Oh my gosh! And straight away I was just like, his girlfriend.
Yeah.
I was just like, yo, I'm the shit. Like, I'm not just his girlfriend. Like, yeah, great, I love him, but.
Yeah, you're more than that.
I'm more than that.
Yeah.
Like, so that was like, oh, so I don't talk about that because I don't ever want to project this goals,
mm-hmm.
this goals of she's getting her money, she's doing this, she's talking about money, she's confident, and she's got a man, and she's been with him for this long.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes like this goals and, or she does this, but she ain't got a man.
Ah, I see.
So then there becomes this and or but, mm-hmm. and I'm like, yo, like, not everyone wants that.
Mm-hmm.
And you shouldn't put her value on that because you wouldn't do it to a man.
True. True. I don't think men are defined by relationships.
Yeah.
Unless, I think the one thing I'd probably say is unless they've got a woman who is doing things.
Yeah.
Then they'd be like, oh, you know, he's doing stuff like power couple, for example.
Yeah.
So I think men probably get the positive aspect when they're with a woman who's doing bits.
Oh, but they do, but, you know, the women sometimes get like, oh, how does he cope with, you know,
you being
so out there and so confident. It's a lot, isn't it?
It's funny you say that because one of my previous partners, you know, she was a model.
Yeah.
She was into Carnival, etc.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of my friends would ask me, how do you deal with her being in Carnival outfits, being a model, etc.?
Mm.
How do you deal with the male attention? And for me, it was neither here or there. I was like, that's her. She can do what she wants. She's her own woman. Don't think that she's got to rein it in because of me.
Mm.
And it was peculiar to them because it was, I think with a lot of men, they have this mentality that when a woman is in a relationship, she must become modest in some respects, or that she must rein in her womanhood in other ways. And I was like, she was this before me. So why should she change when she's with me? I'm glad that she's doing this because Absolutely. She's got her own sense of autonomy, she's got her own freedom.
Absolutely.
And this is her brand.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to take any away from her brand. And anytime someone asks me, oh, that's Seeps' girlfriend, I'll be like, nah, call her by her name.
Straight.
I'll be like, call her by her name. Yeah, because, she's my girlfriend.
But what? She has her own name.
Exactly. I was like, nah,
I'm going to do a whole blog post about this. I've been saving so many, but one's like, it's called hashtag say her name.
Yeah.
And being, I don't actually refer to a lot of women as love anymore or babes. I stop it. You've got a name.
Yeah.
Because I don't do it to men.
I agree.
So you give them that name.
I think
you give them that name. Identity that.
Most definitely, and I think sometimes we can get lost in titles, and I think sometimes we define ourselves by those titles.
Yeah.
Oh, that's my boyfriend. That's my girlfriend. And then we get absorbed by that title and we must live up to that title. When in actuality, that title is not for each other, that's for the world. They can do whatever they want with it. How you operate within each other, it shouldn't be defined by, because you're my girl, you must do X, Y, and Z. Because I'm your man, you must do X, Y, and Z. When you put yourselves in those parameters of a title, you're restraining the growth within your relationship. Because you're then taking this societal notion of what a relationship is, or what a girlfriend should be, what a boyfriend should be, and applying it to yourself, when actually you should be defining that concept on your own terms.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. I think one of the other things as well that I kind of struggled to talk about and I didn't explain was the preface.
Mm-hmm.
And that experience of why I had that fight.
Mm-hmm.
And a few people have been like, what was that about?
Mm.
Because I didn't go into it. Yeah. I think when I read that, I kind of struggled to read over it because it was just an awful experience.
Mm.
But, yeah, so that was a bit I struggled on as well.
What, in terms of writing about?
Yeah, writing it, but reading it back.
Like, was it a cathartic process?
What does that mean?
Cathartic.
Yeah.
It means like therapy, in terms of the process of therapy, in terms of doing something.
No, it didn't feel therapeutic.
Mm.
No.
Did it stir up some sentiments that you didn't want to explore?
It stirred up sentiments. I don't know if it's that I didn't want to explore it. The thing about me is I still feel very young. So I'm 24.
Mm.
So talking back on an experience that happened when I was 16 was 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't 12, wasn't 20. But I know that there's certain experiences that as I get older, I'm more than happy to share.
Mm.
But when it still feels so close to home, I'm like, I don't have the emotional capacity to talk about this.
I think everything in time.
Yeah.
I think everything in time, there's some sentiments that people sometimes, when it comes to certain things that have happened in the past, they expect you to get over it in a period of time. Well, unfortunately, that's not how emotions work.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. It just has to happen, and one day it will just click and you'll talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I think I'm ready to talk about something and I'll be like, no. it's not happening naturally, so yeah.
Are you generally a calculated person? So from working in finance, do you think that even your emotions are calculated now?
Yes. I am very strategic. Very strategic.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
No. I think it's a good thing. And I think it's the way I personally operate best. It doesn't work for everyone.
Okay.
Because some people will lose their heads.
Yeah.
And my vengeance is mine. More. I'm not that type of person. I'm just like.
You're not very Machiavellian.
Yeah. I'm going to read up about it. But.
It's interesting because you learn a lot about yourself. So I've read a lot of those kind of books like Machiavelli, 48 Laws of Power.
Oh yeah, 48 Laws of Power is one of my favourite books.
Yeah, and it puts you in a different mindset, but in other respects, it kind of teaches you how clinical are you and how devilish in some respects are you, or how calculated are you, because those books are very calculated books. They teach you about logic, rationale, and how to make the most absolute best decision to get the greatest outcome that suit you. So those books can teach you a lot about yourself. But the reason why I ask about being calculated with emotion, in the context of like even friendships or relationships, granted I know you don't like talking about relationships, but in the context of, say, friendships now, has that ever worked to your disadvantage? Have friends ever given you a backlash for the way you are at times? And how have you dealt with that?
Sometimes I can make an outside observation and it's wrong.
Mm.
And my friends will say, like, you're wrong,
mm-hmm.
and that's not cool, you can't say that, and things like that, and I'll say why I said it, and then once they've said what they say, I just apologise.
Mm.
I just apologise, and I say I'm sorry, but I find I'm quite, although I have my friends, and I love my friends, I'm quite a distant person. I spend most of my time alone.
Are you quite guarded?
Yes. But I know the people who love me,
mm-hmm.
and I know the people who are there and who care for me. And but in terms of like calculated emotions. My type of calculated emotions is the type of, if I reach out to friend X and I'm telling her, man, I've got this ebook coming out, I've got this post coming out, I've got my event coming out, I've got this branch, same thing as the event, but I've got this podcast coming out and things like that. After point two, I'm like, I calculate and I stop and I say, how's she doing? What's she up to? Because she might not even want to hear this right now. She might be going through some shit. So I'm like, how is she? And that's how I'm calculated, to realise that
it's not all about you.
It's not all about me. And that sometimes we forget that some people want, everybody wants a time where they feel like they can talk and they can shine. And and I'm like, yeah, like, talk. Let me know. What can I do? How can I be there? And there are friends that sometimes I don't even talk to often, see their work online. I'm like, yeah, cool. I'll find a way to put a spin on it and promote it. And that's not, it's calculated in a way of, I may not talk to you much, we might be busy, etc., etc., but I'm still supporting. So it's calculated in that way.
I hear that. I think at times when it comes to emotions and when it comes to being calculated, I think sometimes people can refer to you as cold. And I think when women are referred to as cold, it's a lot more...
like you're a bitch?
Yeah, to put it in the most polite way. Yeah. So do you find it when being this calculated person in the context of men that you have been referred to as cold? Or is it, have you still able to have a healthy...
Balance. I explain. I'm very good at explaining the reason I'm doing the things I'm doing. And I think that's what brings me and anyone back to a level playing field. Because I'm never trying to make you feel small. I'm not trying to undermine your life authority. But I'm trying to understand why. And sometimes I'll ask things because I want to challenge you. Like, or sometimes I'll ask things because I simply don't understand why you've done this. Like, for example... I think there's a wonderful group of ladies who's created a black girls book club online, and I said, why is it only black girls? People think, why are you asking that question? You're a black girl, just sit down, just be part of it. But I say, no, why is it only black girls? And they say, why not? I say, no, I'm asking you, what was your actual motivation for it? I am not questioning you for the sake of questioning you. I want to know why. I don't want to know why not. I want to know why. So they're like, oh, like, she's direct. And I'm like, yeah. It's so funny because one of the young women who came to the brunch today, I met her at my uni that I went to, Essex Uni, and I was ACS president. And when we had our first ACS meet and greet a few years ago, she was there, she was on the panel, and her friends walked out mid-session. I ran after her, she was at the front, and I said, excuse me, why did you walk out? Then one of my boys told me that she was just like, oh yeah, she said that you're cold or something like that. So when I saw her next, when I was running around for the next event, I was just like, I heard you said I'm cold. Is there a reason why? And she was just like, well, yeah. I was like, can you imagine if you did an event? So straight away, or a few days later, I like to let people know why I did what I did. There's always a cause. It's not. Why did you do your hair like that? It's like, you know, what's your motivation for doing it? And hey, if that's how you feel, like, run with it. Sometimes I'm just asking you things to check it out.
So in saying that, do you think you're entitled to an explanation? Because
if you're pitching me anything, yes.
But in terms of someone else's action, do you think you're entitled to them explaining the action?
If they don't want to explain it to me, that's fine. I'll just always remember that about you. I won't hold it against you. I'll just remember that about you. And
what does it say, though, if they don't give you an explanation? How do you take it?
It's their choice. I have no idea what their motivation is or their reason is for saying no. I don't judge people. I've seen too many things and too many experiences. Someone could just be a closed person because of their life and their upbringing. I always think about it in that circumstance. So I think, who am I to try and come and open them up versus what they've been through?
Fair.
I think about it that way. But Yeah, I don't judge them for it. But if they ever come to me and they want to know something, I'm like, oh, now I have something you need.
Yeah.
So then I come back to that. I'm like, you're still not going to answer that question. And then they're like...
That's where the pettiness comes in.
Yeah. So I'm low-key petty. Like, I'll find a way to be like, okay, so now you need this, now you need that. But it won't ever be in a like, now you need me. Like, yeah. It would just kind of be like, yeah, okay, cool, like, what were we really saying about that thing I asked you about 3 years ago? Like,
fair play. But it's interesting you touch on the example of a black girl's book club.
Yeah.
What do you think of the movement as such in terms of, you know, black-owned businesses, etc.? Do you find it very... Is it a good thing that it's exclusive, or would you prefer it to be inclusive?
What do you mean by inclusive? Like,
so inclusive of it, not just necessarily being that black should support black, but there should be a remit of actually, yes, black should support black, but at the same time, we're still open to those that may not be black. Or is it, do you think that it should just be kept as the way it's been modelled in terms of, you know, black people should support black people?
Yes, it's time. It is time.
Mm-hmm.
It has not been time for 500 years. It is time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how long are we going to wait?
Yeah.
People are dying. Like, it is time. Same with women. Women supporting women. Stop being jealous. Turn your jealousy into admiration. Get up. It is time. I'm more than okay with saying that and being like, okay, let me try and shop here, or let me try and do this, or let me try and put money in that person's pocket. Because I see it, and I see the Jews do it. I see some... I think some Indians do it. I don't see it as strongly, but that's not necessarily because it's not there. It's just I haven't seen it.
Mm, okay.
Chinese people do it. And I'm like, look at this. And then look at us.
I think sometimes it can be seen, like with the whole Jewish and Asian example, I think sometimes it's seen with a rose-tinted lens. Me coming from an Asian background.
Yeah.
Granted, we do support our own, and there's mechanisms in place. So, like... You know, if someone is set up well here and someone from India comes here, they can live with that person to kind of put them on their feet, you know, give them a job in their own company and whatnot, in their own business.
Mm.
So granted, those things do happen, those mechanisms do happen, but I think sometimes that aspect of the politics in between can be distorted and is not really spoken about when you see those examples. So when I refer to that, I mean, so... within the Indian community, or within, from my experience of being within the Indian community, the aspect of finance in terms of helping your own comes with a degree of politics as well. And who you...
it does in every...
Yeah. I mean, in comparing it, I guess, to the black community as such, I mean, you do see it, but I just don't think it's promoted as much. I mean, I do see examples of certain communities, like, funnily enough, I feel like West Africans help each other quite a lot. So then you can get into quite... aspects in a way we're saying that, you know, if you come from a particular, if you come from Nigeria, for example, from what I've seen, from my experience, they do seem to help their own quite a lot.
If you're here.
Mm.
In Nigeria, it's a different story.
Of course, I can only speak from what I see.
Okay, yeah, definitely here. People are willing to help and things like that. I mean, the trouble I have with some people is they don't see... First of all, they don't see the bigger picture.
Mm-hmm.
And as in, when I say the bigger picture, I mean that sometimes I look at women and they see a girl and she's got the cutest weave and the nicest makeup and the nicest clothes, and that is their biggest aspiration, to look good.
Mm.
They're not even thinking bigger to how we can help each other,
mm-hmm.
how we can turn these things into tangible legacies,
mm-hmm.
or intangible legacies too. And two, sometimes some people don't think that there's enough out there, and it doesn't help because the generation above us has come from, you know, grinding hard, working hard, but not working as smart.
Mm.
So you think that there's a bar. So some people don't think it's available to everyone. So I don't think that we help as much as we can, but I think the more of us that push out there and like, yo, this is available, it's mm-hmm. here, it's here, that's when they'll start to clock life and, you know, start to think higher. But that's why I'm all about now, because I don't want to get to an age where I'm not relatable anymore.
Mm-hmm.
The moment I push past 30 something, especially as a woman, you just become, mom or a wife, and people can't, some people can't see past that. It becomes a different language. Mm. But right now I can still talk to the kids, and although it's funny because older people look at me like, what do you have to teach them? And I'm like, this is what I have so far. And saying, you have to say, especially as a young person, this is what I have, but it's enough right now.
Mm.
There's more to come, but right now it's enough.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
No, I agree. So, following on from that, what do you have planned in the short to mid and long term? Usually I say 6 to 18 months, but I can see that you're quite a bit more longer than
6 to 18 months, property. Getting into investment property, definitely. And I say that with vim and with my chest, because there's, since I was young, there's so many things that I have prophesied over my life. On, you know, Facebook shows you your old status. Yeah. Said 6 years ago that I wanted to be a fashionista financier.
Yeah.
That's just mad to me. So I'm very into like, yeah, boom, this is what I want to do. Refined currency, I want to take it to a point where maybe it's something I do. I wouldn't say full time, because I enjoy my personal brand and I do enjoy fashion in a certain sense, and talks like this, you know, this doesn't necessarily have everything to do with refined currency. So it's more about, should I say, getting my personal businesses off the ground, teaching more people how to get that money, just to show them that the choices are out there. If you start to learn how to make $3,000 or $4,000 a month for yourself outside of your job, and you're willing to give yourself that time, you have a choice. Leave your job, and it makes you question, do I love my job? If you do, you stay. If you don't, you go. You find the next thing that you love, but you've got options. So I'm just ready to learn, which means that there's going to be periods I just go quiet, periods where I'm not really seen for the sake of building and learning and growing. So yeah, that's me.
That's the next 6 to 18 months.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so where can people find you then?
Oh my gosh, www.thesollifestyle.com. It's the SOLlifestyle.com. And there's Refined Currency. That's R-E-F-I-N-E-D. So like refined, like sugar, refined currency. So that basically means the new age of women. The new age of women and money.
Okay.
And yeah, that's where you can find me. I'm all over Twitter and Instagram as, you know, Bola_Soul, BOLA_Soul. And yeah, that's where I'm at. If you guys want to find me, I'd much appreciate it. Please, as always, let me know who you are and what you do. It's the question that I always ask people, because I never want it to be like, I have fans, or I have people that I don't have fans, I don't have haters. Like, those words to me are mad.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, reach out to me. Like, I get that some people may be in admiration of what I do, but me too, I'm human. Holler at me. Let's talk.
Let's have a conversation.
Yeah, let's have a conversation.
I hear that. Well, it was very lovely speaking to you. I think this has been in the works for a while in my mind, because I see what you do and I rate what you do.
Thank you.
And I don't just say that because you're a guest here, but I like it. You know, I'm quite pretentious at times to who I reach out to. So
wow.
Yeah.
Wow, I feel honoured.
Yeah, I'm a pretentious little prick sometimes. But in saying that, you know, when I see people doing good things, I want to kind of project that. But again, thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, that's another episode of Finding Your Forte. And as always, find your forte, live your forte, and love your forte.
Find your forte.
Live your forte.